Well, welcome, guys. It's good to see you both again in the new year. Today, we're going to be chatting about old age, getting older, and all the implications of that. And I think, you know, most of us have had some experience of dealing with older parents. I know certainly Steve and myself have. I'm not sure what the situation is with you and your parents, David.
Yeah, so both my parents have sadly passed now.
Oh, right.
And my mum did pass away with dementia.
Yeah, mine too. And Steve, you're still going through it all with Monica's mum and your dad, aren't you?
It seems a little bit troubling statistically, as probably if you just take the three of us and the percentage of our parents who have ended up with dementia is quite high. I wonder if that's the national average. I think we should all really despair, because from the inside, I've lived with it for about 6 years now, three parents, and it's been absolutely awful. And it's reaching its peak at the moment. In fact, as I speak, Monica, my wife, is in hospital with her mum, a 96-year-old, who's got advanced dementia, Alzheimer's, is confused, is angry, is not eating, and just about everything you can think of, all in one go. Monica's, I mean, last night we had six calls in the middle of the night from her mum. I mean, this is a 96-year-old that can use a mobile phone, which is a little bit unfortunate. But she phoned us up midnight, between midnight and 1 o'clock, with just repeating one word, Monica, Monica, and that was it. Mm. How do you deal with that? And it's just so sad. And our society, obviously, people are living longer. And in the old days, people, I suppose, died off of physical diseases before the mental disease sort of came in. Yeah. So we're probably the first generation to see so much dementia.
And we're not, well, I mean, David is incredibly youthful.
He is.
You and me, we're no spring chickens either, are we?
Well, you certainly aren't, no.
Oh, thank you very much.
We should declare our ages, David.
Go on, then.
I'm going to be 60 in June.
60 in June.
Yeah.
I'm going to be 69 in March.
And I'm 70 in October.
Now, would you believe that? From our youthful voices.
I am the most senior and the most mature and the most wise. And you will bow down and listen to what I say.
Yep.
If you're going to believe that, you'll believe anything.
We had a chat, I think, the other day, David, and you were talking about you went to a dinner party or something with other people of your sort of age.
Yes.
Did you consider yourself younger than them or older than them, even though they were more or less your age?
They were both the other two guys there were both 69, same age as me, but they both had completely grey hair. My hair isn't gone completely grey yet. I've still got quite a lot of original colour. So actually, I did feel that I was younger than them. But you know what? I don't know if you're the same as me, but you feel younger in your head than you are in your body.
Hmm.
And I still feel that in my head, I'm still in my 20s. I don't know if that's the same for both of you.
No, that's old. I'm still a teenager.
20s.
My wife still thinks for my musical taste, as you probably gathered from last time, and attitudes. And I think it does help having boys. You know, I've got three grown-up boys who themselves think they're teenagers. You know, the males of our family, not as mature as we could be in our outlook.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? As you get older, you do change in lots and lots of ways. And I think Steve and I were talking about this the other day, David. And I was saying, Steve was saying that when he goes into shops, he chats to people. Now, let's face it, Steve is one of the most antisocial people I've ever known. And he's actually started chatting to people who he doesn't know.
But that's dementia. It's coming. That's true. And I feel that people look at me and feel safe.
Yes.
I'm not a threat.
Yeah.
Because of, I suppose, you know, it's apparent that, you know, my age. I mean, that there are men of our age who are predators, but I think perhaps I don't look like a predator, perhaps. But yes, it does enable me to talk to people, and it is a very recent phenomenon, so I'm only just getting used to it.
I think I found the same. I used to be very inhibited and quite shy, And now I just talk to anybody, you know, I sit down on a bench or in a chatting to somebody, a cashier in a shop, and I'll chat easily to anyone. And I wouldn't have done it when I was younger. I think for the same reason, Steve, that I kind of felt as though I could be a threat to somebody if I just started chatting to them.
Yeah.
I'm naturally a hermit in the way I live my life. You know, it doesn't. So I'm like you, David. I'm actually incredibly shy. But Joe says that I'm really good at socializing with people. You know, I turn on the charm offensive. But again, I think that is a recent phenomenon. It's not the way I was before. And I think it comes from being a bit of a loner, maverick. But I do generally like people, I think I've said before on the podcast, provided it's in small doses.
Yeah. Do you find also, guys, that you've got grumpier as you've got older? You know, there was a great program, wasn't it? Grumpy Old Men and Grumpy Old Women.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Rick Wakeman comes to mind. I can't remember any of the others. There was a film as well, I think, with the Odd Couple, Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Yes.
A couple of grumpy old men. I did a Google of grumpy old men, and there's quite interesting about features of grumpy old men. So I just wanted to check you out, the pair of you, to see how many of these, certainly not all of them, but maybe one or two of them. Okay, number one, you don't like people getting in your personal space. Yes,
check.
Or no?
Yeah.
Check. This is a weird one. Finding crumbs anywhere outside the kitchen makes you fly into a rage.
No.
I've got terrible OCD with stuff like that.
Oh, so it gets for you then.
I've usually caused the crumbs to be there, so I don't have a
me
problem.
Me too. I'm carrying them around with me. You don't like loud music.
Somewhat. I can't stand loud music in public places.
Uh-huh. That's because you've got a couple of earpieces, hearing aids.
No, it's not just that. It just annoys me, irritates me. And particularly, I remember going into I can't remember what the record shop was called, but it was in Leamington. And they were playing something which was basically somebody screaming. And I thought, this is the most appalling noise I've ever heard in my life. And it was so loud. And it was meant to be music, but I mean, we've talked about music last time, but I'm sure this wasn't music. It was just a noise.
I was going to say, have you seen that video of Yoko Ono screeching? I can't imagine a whole hour of that, but I like loud music. I think because my ears are still reasonably intact. You know,
I find it unbearable, Steve. My local Waterstones in Altrincham has the most soothing and genteel classical music when you walk in. It's like a touch of heaven for me. So,
if I go used to like...
I go to Starbucks in Sainsbury's, it's a completely different kettle of fish.
I liked Cafe Nero in Rugby when we used to live there, because they always used to play what I think they call as cool jazz or something like that. It was very sort of laid back, kind of lounge type music, but it was just really nice, and it wasn't at an intrusive volume, so you could just sit and have your coffee and read your book or do something on your laptop at the same time.
Okay, next one. You don't like birds.
Birds.
I think we're talking about the feathered variety.
The feathered variety.
I can take them or leave them. Monica loves them. In fact, today we spent £13 on two baskets of fat balls for the birds in our garden. I mean, she spends more on them than she spends on me.
quite right, too.
Fat balls.
I hate birds.
Birds are fine. Birds are lovely.
I can't stand birds. I think it's because my mum used to have a phobia of them, and she used to scream if we sometimes got a bird came down the chimney in our house. And it would be complete panic. And I think I just picked that up from her. So even if I'm driving, and you know, sometimes you get a bird comes towards the screen.
Yeah.
I duck. And
they never hit you.
They've never hit me, but Debbie always laughs at me because I just go, I just can't stand it. I've never held one or never touched one in any shape or form. And I just think they're, ooh.
I'm just thinking, Monica loves birds, but I remember one situation a few years back in Llandudno when a seagull came down and ate her sandwich. You know, she's never forgotten that. Just, you know, you hear stories of these seagulls, don't they? They're quite rampant and quite aggressive.
Yeah.
And she's never liked sandwiches ever since, I think. And that's put her off sandwiches because you never know when the birds are lurking. You dress for comfort only. Oh, that's got silence.
Well,
and you like your trousers as stretchy as possible.
Yeah, I don't like the trousers pinching your belly, particularly after the Christmas period when they're definitely pinching the belly. But no, I mean, when I was in work, you know, I always wore a suit to work, you know, smart suit. So yeah. that was fine. But yeah, when I'm at home now, having been forced to take early retirement, you just lounge about in your most comfortable clothes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Debbie says I'm a slob. So whenever she tends to insist I buy certain clothes that if we're going to go out, I look a bit smarter, but I really can't be bothered. Clothes are for comfort for me.
Yeah, me too. Dress for comfort and probably built for comfort as well. I think as are you, David Shepherd. David Jones, they can't see him, but he's kept his shape quite well compared to the other two. But,
my shape is closer to the kind of that podgy thing in... What was it in Ghostbusters? It was a great big
Marshmallow Man.
Marshmallow Man. I mean, I think that's the closest to me.
That's a little bit extreme.
Go on then.
I'm going to keep going. You have zero patience with people. That sounds like me, definitely. So that goes back to an early discussion.
No, I don't think I have. I think I've got quite good patience with people, but I have found that I'm quite critical. Not always to people's faces. And I've kind of made a decision. I'm going to try and not say anything negative about people this year. I don't know if that's a New Year's resolution or not, but it's something which I'm quite determined to do, is just to start to be positive about people.
I do believe you've already insulted me once on this podcast. So that you're
Yeah, but you don't count.
Oh, okay. I'm not a person. I'm not a people.
Well, no, if I say it to your face, it's always a sign of affection.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's best to be noticed, even if it's being insulted, I suppose. You hate getting invited to large social gatherings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I avoid them like the plague.
Yeah, but it's really hard for me because Joe's, my wife, is such a social butterfly. And I'm the complete opposite. I'm okay if I go to a party, and we don't go that very often to large gatherings, but if we do, then I'm okay if I'm just sat with one person.
Yeah.
Talking about the football or books or history or something. Mm. But trying to make small talk with people, that's just anathema to me now.
It's quite funny because I think all three of us are probably very similar. Maybe David Shepherd is a bit more gregarious, but I'm exactly like you, David Jones, because... And this is not just a grumpy old man thing. This is since I was a teenager, I think. Large social gatherings is a no-no for me. I don't think I'll even be there at my own funeral. But your idea of a good night is ordering a takeaway for one and shutting off your phone. We probably are the generation that probably are quite reliant on our phones, despite our age. I can't imagine shutting off my phone. Be quite honest.
No, but I would never ever order a takeaway.
Really?
Never ever. Joe would, but I would never order a takeaway.
Is that because of your condition, your bowel thing?
Well, even without that, Steve, I just find the food just so plastic and rubbish. But
I've come to the same conclusion, David. We had a couple of takeaways not so long ago, and we hadn't had one for yonks, and I was so disappointed with them, and I would rather go out occasionally, even if it was just a couple of times a year, and spend more money on a really good meal than waste it on, you know, Deliveroo or Just Eat or whatever it is.
Well, I won't talk about my Just Eat. I've got them on speed dial. there's an interesting statistic, apparently, from the United Nations. The official age when you're old now is 60, apparently.
Still a whippersnapper then.
Yeah, I think that, to me, that's quite young. And that's, no. Maybe that is averaged over the whole world, but...
No, 60 is the new middle age, I think.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I remember my grandfather on my mother's side, he died in his 60s when I was about 13 or 14. And my memory of him is of such an old man.
Yeah.
Really, sort of a really lined face and stooped and, you know, losing it. But he was younger than me now, you know. People got old. People were really old in the old days, weren't they? You know, and like you said, David, at the best, I consider myself middle-aged, you know, not old yet.
Strange, Steve, because my dad died of a massive heart attack when he was 65.
Yeah.
My elder brother has just turned 66. So he said it was really strange to pass the age at which my dad died. So, yeah, it's a funny one. But my dad wasn't one of those people who felt really old. So it was, even though he'd been ill for some time, he'd already had one heart attack.
Yeah.
And he'd been a smoker all his life as well. So it was still a shock when the second one took him, you know, and really quite upsetting.
Yeah. My dad had triple heart surgery about 15 years ago. And the doctor said, this will keep you going for another 10 years. And we're all thinking, he's living off borrowed time. He's 97 and his heart's as strong as ever. You know, I'm absolutely unbelievable. It's the only thing that's keeping him going, because the brain's gone, the body's gone in general. Mm. But the heart, I suppose, if it keeps beating, you're still there.
I certainly think it's something that, you know, to pray about against dementia. I mean, it seems such a debilitating thing, and it robs people of their personalities.
Yeah.
Completely. So that you lose the person that was there before. And it makes it very difficult to relate to the new person that you've got, I think. Yeah. And I always had a lot of admiration for you, Steve, because you've been very incredibly loyal to your mum and dad, and to Monica's mum as well. I spent a lot of time visiting them and seeing them. And, well, I was just going to say, I'm not a natural carer. I find it very hard to have the patience when people are debilitated like that.
It's a different word. The word is duty, because I'm not a natural carer. Monica is a natural carer, but she's very big on duty.
Yes.
And she really takes, in fact, we both do, we take the commandment very seriously about honouring your father and your mother.
Yeah.
In her case, it's like when after her mum's gone, she wants to be able to look back and say to herself, I did the right thing by her. Even if it puts her into a lot of difficulties, as it is now, because she's in hospital with her mum at the moment. But, you know, when I think about my dad was a he-man, you know, one of those who did handstands on the beach and, you know, one of those sort of Clark Gable types or Burt Lancaster, you know, back in the 50s, 60s. And always a man's man. And now I went to see him in his care home at 97, and he's sitting on his bed, emaciated, sitting in his pants with a nappy under his pants, food down his face, unshaven. And I had to dress him and take him downstairs. No conversation. There's no strength in his body. And as David said, that is an empty shell. That's not the father that I grew up with. Not that we were particularly close, but he was still my father, and he still was a functioning human being until this dementia and literally, you know, old age took over. But if he died tonight, most of my grief has already been and gone.
Yes.
Because he's not himself anymore. And with my mum as well, I was really close to my mum, and she died about 15 months ago. And I haven't grieved properly for her in the way that you would normally do. She was taken quite quickly. She just had an infection and then she died, basically. But I think I'd already been grieving for her because, you know, dementia took over in her mid-80s, and she hadn't been the same person. So it's a strange one. You know, we are getting older and living too long, and I think that's our society. The medical profession is there to prolong lives and keep people alive as long as possible, and unless the family say otherwise, you know, through a lost in power of attorney or The thing is, we haven't got that for Monica's mum. So Monica doesn't have any power to decide whether the doctors are doing the right thing or not.
Yeah.
Which might be a good thing, because Monica wouldn't want the responsibility of saying, okay, turn her off now. You know,
yeah.
I think that would really kill her, really. But
I wonder if we could switch it and just talk about some of the amusing, you know, just to lighten it a little bit. And certainly the amusing things that relate to getting older that have affected us.
Are you talking about us individually?
Yes.
The interesting thing is that we are written off, aren't we? Our society writes us off at 65 or 66 now. And yeah. I look at my contemporaries, people I was together with at university, and they're all off sort of visiting garden centres and gardening and going on holidays and all that. And I'm still doing things like podcasts and websites and writing books and stuff. And you know something, I prefer my life. I would hate to have a life of leisure. I don't think I could cope just being in leisure the whole time. You know, I just feel, and I think we are born to work. You know, I think that we are created for work. The leisure thing came from Greek philosophy. You know, the Greeks just lived for their leisure, you know, going back 2,000 years. But that's our society as well, isn't it? You know, thank God it's Friday, you know. Yeah, Friday is the big day, and I don't like Mondays, you know. So it's just what goes on between the two. That's what a lot of people just live for, the weekend. In terms of finding anything funny, oh God, I'm struggling at the moment, and both of you are completely silent. So I'm glad you brought that subject up, David Shepherd, without having any stories of your own to tell. You probably thought that me and Jonesy here had something, but...
Well, I'm
definitely known as a grumpy old man now. I mean, even my two... Well, certainly my little boy who's six... He refers to me as grumpy daddy. Joe refers to me as grumpy daddy as well. So I've definitely got a shorter fuse than I used to have. And again, as you said at the start, David, I mean, just little things just that would never have bothered me in the past really do irritate me now. And you know, I'll wax lyrical, at least in my own head, about the shortcomings of society, yes. The shortcomings of our leaders, the shortcomings of music or anything else. That's a real sign of getting old, definitely.
I do that when I'm watching television.
Yeah.
And I see things. I can remember my, I don't know if I told you this previously, but I remember my dad always used to groan and moan at the television when something happened that he didn't like. And I found myself doing the same. So I grumble and I go, oh, what are these people talking about? And I get so frustrated by some of the things that are going on. And so, yeah, I don't tend to do that in public, but certainly when I'm watching television. But the one that got me recently, which I realised was quite funny, was when I went just after Christmas and had this little meeting with people for a meal. I found that we were swapping ailments, and it was a bit like trying to do Snap or something, or Top Trumps or whatever you call it. And so what pills are you on? Oh, you're on those. Yeah, no, I've been taking those for 10 years. Yeah, how do you find them? Really? Okay. I tell you what, I've also got something wrong with my left knee. It's arthritis in my left knee. Really? Yeah, no, you've got it in the shoulder. And we went on for hours. And it seemed like the main topic of conversation were the various ailments and medications that we had. Extraordinary.
Yeah, I could think, I can associate with, in fact, there are things that now one has to consider seriously, whereas before you took for granted, such as bending down, bending down to pick something up off the floor. You know, there has to be a strategy of about getting up again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Which is really pathetic.
When I've been at the allotment and I've been sort of kneeling down and kind of pulling weeds and things, I'll shout across to Debbie and say, Deb, I can't get up. And Deb will have to come across and give me a hand just so I can get up. Because I just kind of feel like I've got no strength to get up on my own.
Well, I'm awaiting surgery on a prolapse disc. I've been waiting for ages, and it's that bad now that The consultant, when I saw him in November, said, you know, we'll be able to, you know, get the disc out, but we may not be able to alleviate some of the neurological pain you're suffering from in your hands and feet. But I twisted it again shortly before Christmas, and it was literally just reaching down to turn the switch off. That was it. Yeah. And went to get back up, and it had gone completely. It took me about 10 days. And even now, you know, talking about ailments, I've still got that twinge, so I'm being terribly careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this side of it, David, is we're now getting reminders that life is fragile.
Yes.
And that we know that the hourglass is more empty than full. I'm always talking to my eldest brother about this. He's 10 years older than me, and he's in great nick for somebody of his age. So same age as you, basically, David. And he's in great nick. He goes swimming every day. And we've always done stuff, you know, as brothers. We've always played football, or we've run. My favorite thing was playing tennis. So I think that's why we've maintained, relatively speaking, a slim and trim body. Although I've definitely got a few extra pounds now that I'm struggling to get rid of the so-called fabled, which isn't a fable at all, middle-aged spread. But it is a reminder that, you know, the train of death, if you like, without depressing anybody, is coming down the tracks for us all. And at some point, we're all going to have to embark on it.
I think I made a note of that. I thought that was the train of death is coming along the tracks towards us all. I love that. No, I don't. I hate it.
Yeah, we can't refuse. I used to say to the students in when I was teaching in high school, we'd be talking about life after death. And I used to make the comment that with the classroom door closed, I would knock on the classroom door and open the door and imagine that there was a skeletal figure there. This was death itself. And I used to say to you, know, you can't turn around to death and say, well, can you just give me another 20 minutes? EastEnders hasn't quite finished yet. And the point I always made to the students was nobody on their deathbed is going to say, do you know what? I wish I'd watched more television.
No, that's true. So very true.
It reminds us of what is the point of us being here? You know, that's a great existential question. What is the purpose?
Yeah.
You know, as Steve alluded to it earlier, you know, is it just to have some kind of hedonistic lifestyle like the Greeks did in terms of, you know, leisure fulfillment, or is there a greater purpose? And I think the three of us would say, well, actually, no, there is a greater purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think we tend to get preoccupied with certain things and fixate on certain things as we get older?
Well, as I was alluding to earlier, you know, just kneeling down was something that wasn't an issue before, but lots of things sort of start impinging in your life when you hit a certain age, and sleep patterns is another one. Toilet patterns, you know, let's say, without going too deep into it, never used to be an issue. Now, you know, I have to keep a record about, well, I won't go into that in too much detail. But it's just have to be more aware of your body. I never used to take any pills. Now I'm on statins. I don't know whether they're doing any good or not, but that's only for the last 2 months. I've got through nearly 68 years not taking any pills until like a month or two ago. So, yeah, there is a gradual change. And I suppose it's for the better. When I saw the cocktail pills that my mum and dad have, you know, it's they have these boxes, don't they? DOS boxes or something. I just can't remember.
Pill boxes.
There's another name, begins with D, but I can't remember. And you have little compartments for all the pills that you take that day, and some of those boxes are quite large. And you just think, you know, some people were just sustained by chemical means. Society is just, say, pumping chemicals in us to keep us going. What happened in earlier generations when there weren't chemicals to keep us going? Yeah. Was it more than that? I know people obviously died earlier, and the average age, I think, has dropped by, like, you know, over the last 100 years, probably, or increased by about 30 years, isn't it, or something? People used to die in their 40s.
So what did we think about what made headline news over the Christmas period about what Esther Hanson said. She felt that if, you know, her condition got any worse, that she'd quite like to you know, end her life by maybe flying off to Switzerland and using Dignitas.
Yeah. The funny thing is, my sister, who's younger than me by about 4 years, works in the social work sector. She runs a home for those at the end of their lives. And even though, you know, she has religious beliefs, as we do, she said that if she ended up like her parents, like my parents, she would actually opt for that herself. She would tell her children, you know, I want to sign up to Dignitas. And that is sort of, it's troubling to think of, and it's not anything that has come into my mind. But then when I see the quality of life, you know, there is no quality life for, you know, for my three oldies. And it impinges on the whole family. Our whole family is affected by you know, particularly my mother-in-law, you know, what Monica has to go through. And that sort of filters down through the generations, even down to the great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
Aware. And so you think you don't really want to be a burden like that. Once you're there and your brain's gone, you don't know what's going on anyway, but you can prepare for it perhaps. And that's what my sister's doing, preparing for that eventuality by saying, I'd rather be out of the picture than be a burden.
I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that the medical profession's main purpose is to preserve life. And they do anything they can to do that. Whereas, in fact, quality of life is, to me, is the most important issue. And, you know, you can be pumped with drugs for years and years and years to keep you going, but your quality of life can gradually get worse and worse and worse and worse. And yet the medical profession is still saying, well, let's see if we can keep them alive. And, you know, if we were living back in 18th century, 19th century, probably even, big majority of people still wouldn't be alive today because the natural course of their life would have come to an end. And it does raise lots of questions. I mean, I'm with Steve, really, and I really don't think I would sign up for Dignitas, but I can understand why people are starting to consider that. And I can understand what Esther Hanson was saying.
Yeah, I think for me, I saw my mum really suffer with the dementia. And there was one particular night when all five of us were around a hospital bed. She'd had a fall in the care home. And it was deeply upsetting and distressing. And we thought we were going to lose that particular night. And she almost miraculously pulled through, even though she had no clues to who we were. We were all around that bed. And my other siblings, I've got two brothers and two sisters, they all said, you know, if there was an option to allow her to die at that point, they would have opted for it. Mm-hmm. I was the only one who said, well, you know, I couldn't do that. But I completely understood, David.
Yeah.
That's what you just said. I completely understood where they were coming from, because nobody wants to look at a loved one and mm-hmm. see them suffering. But mm-hmm. I still think there's something. I think there's two issues, really. I think the first one is, and you could argue this both ways, if we are created in the image of God, do we really have the right to end our lives?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge topic just on its own. And then the second one, which Steve referred to at the beginning, we have a moral duty to care for those who God has placed within our care. So, our mum, our dad, our brothers, our sisters, our husband, our wives. So I don't think it's straightforward at all. And I do think that I know this is raised every time this topic is brought up. I think there really is a danger of a slippery slope. I think some people could opt for death because they don't want to be that burden that Steve referred to, when in their hearts they want to live. So I think that's why it's never so far got through Parliament.
I think I don't know what country, I think it might be Belgium, where it's very easy to have a euthanasia sort of solution. And I might be wrong here, but there are stats that suggest that some people are ending their lives for the most trivial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like just another form of suicide, isn't it? You know, and I suppose that's a separate issue, and that's what society falters into. But going back to your dilemma, David, because I've got that dilemma, and if my mother-in-law had died last night, we all would have been quite relieved, I have to say. And it's not just for us and for that, but it's for her as well.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's a negative for our point of view is that she wasn't a believer. So, you know, her fate remains out of her hands, really, in a sense, again, which is a separate issue. But it's not a black and white thing. You know, it is very much a grey area, and it depends on your circumstances. But if you did a straw poll in our family, virtually everyone would say it's about time that generation were allowed to slip away.
Mm.
And they wouldn't feel any guilt about it. And what does that make us? Evil? Does that make us cold and heartless? You have to see the quality of their life. And so it's very easy to judge, as we do. But as you say, it is a slippery slope, because you can see situations where grasping children would want to bump off an elderly parent in order to get an inheritance. Mm. You know, but you know, there'll be those factors coming in, and I'm sure that happens.
One thing I would agree with you, Steve, and you mentioned it earlier, was that when your mum died, you just felt a sense of relief, really.
Yeah.
And I was the same with my mum. We'd moved in to actually look after my mum, and we looked after her with dementia for about 10 years. And I was driving to work one morning, and I got a phone call. She'd been in hospital, and they'd moved her out into a residential place only a day before, I think, or 2 days before. And I got a phone call, and they just said, "Look, really sorry to tell you that your mother's passed away." And I just felt a sense of relief. And because the difficulty and our life being on hold for 10 years had come to an end. And I have to say, even now, I mean, that was quite a few years back now, I've never grieved. It's not been,
oh, really?
Because as you said, Steve, the grieving had taken place
yeah.
in that I'd lost my mum years and years and years before. She just wasn't there.
Yeah.
I tell you what, though, there were lots of funny moments with dementia. I don't know if you found that. I can remember lots of situations with my mum that, you know, when I look back at them, I just think, oh, my goodness. The classic one was that whenever, this was before we moved in to look after her, but whenever we went to the house, it was about 30 degrees. She had a thermostat on the stairs, and she had a stair lift. As she went up, she would stop the stair lift and turn the thermostat up to full. So you'd go in there and it would be tropical, basically. And I'd say to Mum, have you turned the thermostat up? Oh, no, it wasn't me. And of course, it was. But this conversation we must have had about, 100 times, Mum, please don't turn it up. And we put little signs on which says, do not touch. What would happen? She'd still turn it up. And this would happen time and time again. And until the boiler blew up. And
it had enough.
Basically, the boiler just couldn't cope at operating at peak capacity constantly. You know, I mean, when I look back at it, it was quite funny, but it was incredibly frustrating as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting so told off by Joe at the moment because I turn the heating up all the time. So I feel your mum's pain. I can't bear the cold. I need to be warm all the time. So, yeah. And we've just had a new underfloor heating system put in. So we've got no radiators. And the little panels we've got on the wall to operate it, they're an absolute pain in the backside. So it's a constant battle to try and get it to work.
There's one answer, David. Thermal vests.
Yeah. I haven't got my thermal vest on at the moment, but I have been wearing it over the winter, definitely.
Well, I would have been seen dead in a thermal vest when I was younger. But now, oh my goodness, I can't live without it.
Yeah, what about the other thing, David? Remember you telling me you have a his and hers electric blankets, don't you?
Yeah.
True.
Well, Debbie likes it really hot and I don't like it quite so hot. So I'll be honest, I very rarely put it on, except when it's really, really, really cold. But Debbie decided, we're going to get a his and hers one. which means she can have it on and I can have it off. But oh dear, yeah, you when you're in your 20s, you would never think of things like this, would you?
Oh.
But come on, you must have had some funny stories with your dad. I mean, and your mum, wasn't she? Didn't she sort of thought she was in a concentration camp or something?
Yeah, well, my mum, this is where my creative spark comes from, my mum. But my mum had it as an art form, literally, particularly as she got more and more into dementia. And even worse, when she had the occasional, was it bladder infections? Now, the last time she had one, she had to go in the hospital. And when I used to come and visit, she used to sort of drag me, you know, close to her and say, we need to find a plan to get out of the concentration camp. See that man over there? He's the guard. And I saw this one man over there. He was attacking the patients when no one's looking. Oh, I've got my eye on them. And she'd actually confront one of them in front of me and say, I know what you're up to. You know, he's just an orderly, you know, moving sheets around and saying, I know what you're doing. Don't you think I don't know? And that's it. So she never internalized her. Yeah, she was quite open. And even in the care home, she thought she was in charge. You know, she actually thought she was the boss. And she was talking about arranging the Christmas parties and doing charity things and teaching people and all that. And basically, it was a complete fantasy. She wasn't capable of doing any of these things. But
yeah,
it just kept her going, having this fantasy world. Which is good. At least she had something, you know, to engage her. And that she was always entertaining, you know, whereas my dad is just, there's nothing there. And Monica's mum just talks in circles the whole time.
Yeah.
But one thing, if I just, I was going to open with this because it's a bit naughty, but my mother-in-law, she has a saying and she doesn't care who hears it. And she doesn't like being old. And so for her, old age is S-H-I-T. And she'll say it everywhere, restaurants, in front of kids. And she's probably doing it now in the hospital. She can't cope with being old. And she can't understand why she can't do the things that she used to do when she was in her 20s and 30s. And Monica keeps saying, you're 97 and your brain's gone. You just can't do these things anymore. Where's my car? No, you can't drive anymore. We took it away from you.
Well, as you know, we Debbie and I live in effectively it's a retirement home. And we have a communal lounge, which I go down to occasionally and just chat with people. And before the podcast, I said to them, because they're all in there, most of them in their 70s, 80s. We've got one guy who's 96. And I said, you know, what if you were thinking about, you know, a couple of words to describe what you think about getting older, what would you say? Well, I think only one responded because I think the rest of them were probably asleep or something. And this lady said, forget it. Which I thought was brilliant. And avoid it at all costs. another thing about my mum, I think these stories actually help you remember parts of your parents with affection. It's my mum always had this thing that at Christmas, she would always say, and this was after maybe sort of 10, 15 years of never cooking. You know, all she had carers and they would cook her meals for her. And every Christmas, when the mince pies came out, she said, oh, this is the first year I've not made any mince pies. And I would go, oh no, she hasn't made mince pies for at least 20 years. But it was always, oh, it's the first time I've not made any mince pies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those things actually are amusing, and they do help you, I think.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Where do we stand in terms of, because we are heading to, you know, the final furlong, if you like. Where do we stand in terms of thinking, okay, how am I going to live out my remaining days?
Well, I've always got ambitions. I have to have projects on the go. As poor David Shepherd knows, because I drag him into a lot of them. I think And there's the two things I do to keep my brain going. Scrabble on the phone to get the words, the spelling and all that, every day virtually. And I do these mental arithmetic puzzles from the newspaper. I think it's important that you just keep your brain exercised and to have plans and projects. And I've got loads of them in here. If I told you all my plans now, we'd be going on for hours. But, you know, it's important to not give up and not accept what the world is telling you, that, come on, you're 66, 67, 68. It's the end now. Move into, you know, the retirement home or retirement complex where David Shepherd is.
it's a challenge for you though, David, isn't it? Because having retired early because of health issues, you've now got to find purpose and things to do to keep you going. And how's that going for you?
Well, for me, there's always, I think Steve and I talked briefly about this at some point last year. There's always this internal struggle for me. So I love to write, and, you know, at the moment I'm not in a position of having anything published apart from some articles in Sword magazine. I think I've had one published in a newspaper as well. But the struggle for me is I love to write fiction, and there are times when I'm writing fiction, which I completely enjoy. At the moment, I've just embarked on writing a thriller. And I do wonder, at the back of my head, there's always this little internal voice going, is this really how you should be spending your time? Because as a follower of Christ, do I want to spend the remainder of my days doing things creatively for a secular audience? Or do I want to spend it doing something, in inverted commas, more spiritual? Mm-hmm. So I can keep myself busy, David. There's no problem with that. I mean, it's only been a few months, but I've never been bored, not once.
And
I've heard other people who've retired who said this, you know, I don't know how I had time for work. Mm-hmm. So I'll always keep busy, but it's whether I'm keeping busy doing the, in inverted commas, right things.
Yeah. Well, I think this is one of the things about, I'm going on to a different subject here in a sense, about salt shakers. And I think, and I've seen it always slightly differently to Steve, I think, in that I was saying to him the other day, I think the people who are in the salt shakers team are the salt shakers. And I think there's ways in which we can support each other to enable the creativity that is within that group to be released. And, you know, we have connections, we have skills, we have the various things that we can do to help each other. And, you know, I think that there's something going on there, which I think is quite powerful.
Just to let people know, who may be getting this podcast and not knowing the context, that Salt Shakers is our ministry, just a group of like-minded people, just doing things together. And I suppose what holds us together is our age, really. It's not that we mean to be a group of oldies, it's just that's how it's worked out.
Yeah, we're also all very grumpy, aren't we?
Yeah, so
no, grumpy, no, old men, not true.
Grumpy old men, grumpy old women together, having a good old grump.
Yeah, but that's the battle for me, and it really is genuinely a battle. You know, I'm certainly not ready to be put out to pasture, and I don't think I ever will be. I do have this creativity spark, which seems to be something that's being given to me by God. I mean, just the way I am, it's just the way I operate on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just since January 1st, I've written 4,500 words.
Yeah.
So it's something that's definitely... John Denver used to sing a song to explain to his wife why he had to travel around the world. And he had this lyric in it that went something along the lines of, it's something that's within me. It's not hard to understand as anybody who's heard me sing. And I feel the same about writing. It's just something I have to do. But it's always that question, is what I'm doing the way I should be spending my time?
Yeah.
And that is a real, at the beginning of a new year, this is something that I've been constantly thinking about, even as I've been writing.
Yeah, and I think that's one you've had to tackle as well, Steve, because you've felt that you've produced a pile of books with limited success in terms of an audience. And lots of your projects are picked up by a few, but not by the many. And the question is this, I personally think that following the muse is important, regardless of whether there is, in inverted commas, success, and whether there is a bigger audience than just God himself.
I think success is different for us than it would be in the secular world. You know, in the secular world, success has to be connected to numbers and audiences and influence and such. For me, success is actually finishing something and just for one person to be moved by it. Because I do get emails and letters about people, people that say that stuff that I've written has changed their life. And not just being boastful, it's I can prove it if you like. But that's not important. It's just, as one of you said, you know, following the muse wherever it takes you, and being true to it and getting to hear that voice that's telling you what to do and not to be distracted into anything that we would say of the flesh that maybe would be something that would just be for yourself. And that, for me, that's down to a promise I made to God 30 years ago that everything I did would be for him. And I tried to keep with that with a varying success. But again, that's how you define success. But before we go, I do have one question for David Jones. Is Everton actually going to win a game tonight?
I didn't realise they were playing until this morning. It's interesting, is that as you get older, some of the things that used to be so important to you, they're just not anymore. I love football, Steve. But if Everton lost tonight, you know, whereas it, you know, 40 years ago would have really upset me, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest.
No. More important things.
Far more important things.
I think we've kind of tackled quite a few issues there. And again, we would love to hear feedback from people who are listeners. So do get in touch with us through saltshakers.com and let us know what you think about old age. And in the meantime, this is goodbye from me, David Shepherd, and Steve, and from David Jones.
Go and get your Hall Leagues.
Yeah, and your Zimmer frame.
And your Zimmer
Ovaltine. Bye for now.
Bye.